morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Patty Fink, and our guest today is Arnold Blaine Jones, who is arts editor of the Dallas Voice.
We're going and sometime Oscar predictor.
All-time Oscar predictor attempter.
Well, you know,
I can predict without being correct.
Normally,
I mean, look at economists.
100% on prediction.
That's right.
Normally we have Arnold on before the Academy Awards so he can predict what's who's going to win. We forgot. With our being on Sundays, this is our first time, or our not being on Sundays, first time that we're not on the same day as the Oscars.
And here's a significant little bit of trivia. I was the final guest of the Sunday show.
You were?
Really?
For the
were.
Oscars
right.
Exactly 1 year ago.
It's a year ago that we moved to Wednesday mornings.
Oh, that's right.
A whole year of torture getting up this early on Wednesday mornings.
Thankfully, our listeners don't know that we dress for radio.
Yeah, today is a significant day.
I barely
day.
Made it with pants on this morning.
Today is a really significant day on KNON. Do you know why?
Because it's February 29th?
Well, that's not why. It's because after 28 years of doing all of our announcements using an 8-track player.
No, a 2-track player.
Well, it's a 2-track player now, but it started off 28 years ago when we went on the air. That was an 8-track player. Today's the last day. We're getting one of these things in the studio. It's called, what's the word, computer? I don't know if you've heard of them.
I have. I wonder if we're getting a 286, from 1996.
Well, it's a Commodore 64.
Yeah, something like that.
I thought maybe it would be a Wang. But, that's what we'll call it.
Weiss terminal. That would be cool.
I just want to know that all my Atari cartridges will work on it.
Oh,
possibly.
An Atari. We'll get an Atari. Because KNON is known for getting, used equipment.
And we're lucky to have it.
We are lucky to have it. We love that. And starting tomorrow, in order to play our PSAs, you know what we'll do? You click a mouse.
Oh, wow.
I hope the mouse doesn't bite us, because I don't know how this mouse thing is supposed to work, but...
We shall see.
But like Arnold said before the show, how are we going to play our Jeannie C. Reilly tapes?
Our John Denver 8-tracks.
I know.
You know, I mean, they're not really making any more Blood, Sweat, and Tears 8-track tapes. I'm just saying.
And they're not making 8-track players where I can play them anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, so our guest is Arnold Jones. He wasn't on before the Oscars to tell us who was going to win, so we invited him on to tell us why he was right and they were wrong.
But you read my predictions.
I did read your predictions.
And I was 6 for 6.
He was.
On those six.
On those six.
He was completely right.
Well, those are the only ones I ever discuss on air.
Oh,
so.
Okay, so let's talk about best lighting.
Best lighting? I was going to say...
That's the Tonys.
Did you predict Angelina's leg being such a hit?
I did not.
You didn't see that coming?
I saw it coming when she went out there and posed like a stallion on the Saturday of the Running of the Roses. But other than that, I did not really.
That
know.
Was quite a stance.
It was a big deal. Yeah.
It wasn't a wide stance. It was a. I don't know what we should call it. Is it the posed stance? Because she was already getting mocked from the recipients of the award she was presenting on the stage.
And I've heard about a J-Lo nip slip, although if I don't wear my spectacles while I'm watching the Oscars, I miss them.
See, that's where you missed out. Aaron noticed it immediately.
Really?
And we had to pause the TiVo.
Yeah, I didn't,
she goes,
I didn't
check
notice
this out,
it.
Look. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. It's close to... Exposure.
Okay, so winner of the best documentary was Undefeated.
Yes, I want to talk about this first, actually, because this is one I did accurately predict. Of all the documentaries, of the 5 documentaries, before the Oscars, I had seen 4. But I predicted Undefeated would win, and it did. And I saw it last night, and it was a good prediction. It is basically, and this is why I told David I want to talk about it, it is basically... A real-life version of the first 5 episodes of the first season of Friday Night Lights.
Hmm.
It is... I mean, you couldn't...
A football player gets a back injury?
Breaks a leg injury.
A leg injury.
A torn ACL.
Yeah, so you had to change the story a little bit.
But, I mean, quite literally, the movie is fascinating. But it's It's about a inner city football team in West Memphis that's always done poorly, and it has this middle-aged white guy who is the volunteer coach of all these inner city black kids, and who have never many of whom don't have father figures in their lives, or their fathers have died, or just living without any support, really. I mean, their families are supportive, but the school has no equipment, and
so that would also bring in season 4 and 5, where they split into West Dillon and East Dillon.
Exactly. But the kind of like leader of the team, he's not the best player, but he's like the heart and soul and a smart kid. He's like a 3.9 grade point average. He's a guy named Money, and he gets injured, and then the guy Chavis, who is like out of prison and has terrific anger issues, steps up and becomes a leader. I mean, it's the most heartwarming, like, wonderful movie. I will say this up, and this isn't ruining anything. They do not go undefeated in the season. They only lose their first game. Sort of like the Sarah Palin documentary called Undefeated, which you should not watch.
Not the same story.
Not the same story at all. Although it's interesting because that was also called Undefeated. It's like, what do you mean undefeated? She only ran one national campaign and she was trounced. Then she quit as governor, first term governor, of the smallest populated state in the union.
Sounds undefeated to me.
Well, and then the day that she holds on and holds on, does the teaser forever, and then finally says, "I'm not going to run for president." An hour later, Steve Jobs died. So
is that right? I didn't even know that. Yes, oh, that's like, fun.
Poor Sarah Palin. She's probably
poor Sarah Palin. Are we being showing sympathy for Sarah Palin now?
Well, she got.
Is that the effect of the new computer?
It is. It is.
Could be.
It is for me.
But she was looking for the big accolades, right, and discussion,
exactly,
and follow-up press and all that, and she didn't get any.
Just like Farrah. Everybody's always upstage. Do you know who died on November 22nd, 1963?
Santa Claus.
JFK.
Aldous Huxley and C.S. Lewis.
Really? Yeah, yeah. I bet they did get overshadowed.
They kind of got overlooked when the president of the free world is assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
That's right. Okay, so Undefeated, good documentary.
Yeah, and
supposed to believe that there's real football outside of Texas.
There is real football outside of Texas. It is high school football, it is real football.
We have high school football in Texas. That's where real high school football is played.
Yeah.
Well, life imitates art, sort of.
Yeah. It's an excellent movie, though. It won't come out for a couple of weeks. It's not this Friday. I think it's the following Friday or the Friday after that. But I'll put something in the voice about it when it's coming out, and it's really, really a heartwarming movie.
And let's talk. Let's do this a little bit backwards.
Okay, I was going to say. And another thing interesting: it's a Weinstein movie. It's released by the Weinstein Company, which did gangbusters at the Oscars this year.
The joke was which Weinstein movie will get Best Picture.
Right. I mean, they won with The Artist, but also Best Actress and Makeup for The Iron Lady. Mm-hmm. So it was really a victory for
Well, let's talk Harvey about Weinstein. It. Now, you had predicted The Artist would win. There were 9 pictures that were nominated this
year. 9 pictures. The first time ever 9 pictures nominated.
Explain this new stupid nomination process that they have. Maybe it's good that we don't have to have 5 best pictures, and every year 5 pictures are among the best. Some years there might be 10. Some years there might be...
The way that it used to work, I know the way it used to work, and I'm not exactly sure how it works nowadays, but I think that it's probably the same way. The way that it used to work is what the Academy counts when the nominations come in are not the number of votes that each Academy member gets to put down a list of 5 movies that he thinks are deserving of an Oscar nomination.
And the big story there is the he. Because
it's 77%. No, 77%.
77%.
It's 94% white, but it's 77% male.
So yeah. He is appropriate here.
Right. But the Academy member puts down not just the names of movies, but the order in which he thinks they should be nominated, 1 through 5. And so if a movie appears, and let's just say that there are 100 Academy members, just to make it easy. If every single, all 100, put the same movie down as number 5, it does not count as much as if 21 people put the same movie down as number one, even if that movie appears nowhere else on the list. And so they weight it more in the order that you put. And so what they're doing basically with the nine is they're taking the number of movies that get a number one rating and a certain number of them, and there's like a magic number that and then they start counting down from there. But there's a certain magic number, and with that nine,
So they have to get a certain number. They have to get a certain score, not just a certain number of votes.
Exactly.
And this year, the cutoff was
whatever that number was,
and equaled last year,
nine.
The cutoff.
No, last year and the year before, they declared that it would be a 10 nomination.
So they took the top.
They took the top ten. This year, they pick a score. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a number between 5 and 10, but it does not have to be 5 or 10.
But that's good, though. I mean, that's really reflective of if nobody considered a movie that it was on the everybody's list, but it was never considered number one by anybody, why would it be, you know, considered number one by the Academy to present as a nomination? I mean, it makes sense that if nobody, you know, based on how many said this was the best film.
Well, it's a lot like weighted voting that we talk about in politics, which we actually don't have in most places, but where you don't vote just for your district, but the one person, you can vote for the entire district, and you just put them in the order that you want it. And so, you know, the idea would be that if you had a very strong community, say like a gay community, there's one gay person or two gay people running, you could vote, and you get 10 votes because there are 10, seats. You could vote 5 for gay person 1 and 5 for gay person 2. You just kind of like keep re-voting on the same person over and over again. You could weight your votes on one person.
Right.
And everybody gets, you know, 10 votes. Or however many votes they get. Maybe they don't get 10. Maybe they get 2. But, you know, that you get to weight the votes.
So does everybody in the Academy get screening copies of all the films? Or are they really... They rely upon
those rules,
the billboards.
Those rules
Boulevard.
Change every year. Apparently, I heard a story about how Julia Roberts appeared in Eat, Pray, Love with Javier Bardem, and he had this movie, beautiful film from Mexico, and she thought it was great, but he wasn't really getting any buzz about it, and so she hosted several Academy viewing parties to tell her friends and everything, you should really vote for Javier. And Julia Roberts is a big star and popular and a member of the Academy. And, you know, she got enough interest going that a lot of members of the Academy voted for him in a top position. And now, if you're a member of the Academy, you can't host a watching party. I mean, it's kind of stupid. I mean, what I do... I'm Julia Roberts, I say to my maid, by the way, if you would like to host an Academy viewing party, here's my Rolodex.
And you can use my living room.
And you can use my living room. Right. I hope you invite me, but you don't have to.
Right.
I mean, it's the super PAC version of the Academy Awards.
Right, and I kind of understand you don't want somebody who's real popular campaigning for somebody. But the studios always did, and that's the history of the Academy Awards.
The glossies, I mean, there's campaigning happening.
Yeah. Well, there are, and I mean, everybody's campaigning, and at one level or another. I mean, ever since she lost the Screen Actors Guild Award, I've heard Meryl Streep on a lot more NPR shows, and it's not that she's going out there saying, vote for me, Academy. It's that she's doing this kind of charm campaign where... she's just getting out there and reminding people, oh, well, you know, it's so great to be nominated for a 17th time, even though I haven't won in 29 years. And suddenly people are like, yeah, maybe we should consider giving it to her again.
Let's talk about the best picture, The Artist.
Yes.
Peculiar picture to have won because first silent film since the very first award.
And I actually disagree with that characterization of it.
Okay.
Because if you've seen the Artist, it's not truly a silent film. There is sound. Now, back in the days of the Academy Awards, when they first started, the very first year of the Academy Awards, every winner was a silent winner. But movies at that time came with soundtracks that were usually played in the theater by a piano or an organ, and they actually came with scores that were submitted by the studio. So it wasn't just that some, you know, local schlub was playing, you know, God Bless America while this dogfight was going on. There was an actual written score for it. Those were truly silent films with music. Of course, in The Artist, they have synchronized sound on a pre-existing score. But there is actually sound in the movie, which is very intentional and used in an incredibly smart way.
Such as?
Well, at one...
Nobody has seen this stupid movie.
The plot of the movie is that it's the height of the silent film era, and this man named George Valentin is the most famous actor in the world. And it's very much the same plot as...
Sing
in the Rain.
Oh.
and sound comes along, and he's like, no, people are still going to want to see great silent films. And at one point, you don't realize it until a few minutes later, but at one point he has a dream or a nightmare where he's in his dressing room, and suddenly he can hear street noise, he can hear his dog bark, he can hear when he rattles his keys. He can't talk. But everything around him is making noise, and then he wakes up and realizes that, you know, sound is kind of there, and then at the very end of the movie, he finally agrees to do a musical, and he gets a line. It's like the very last moment of the thing is him, you know, saying a word. It's very much like the movie Silent Movie by Mel Brooks, mm-hmm. in which the only line of dialogue spoken the entire movie is spoken by Marcel,
mm-hmm. right.
who goes, no!
Total irony.
So it's not a truly silent film in that matter. There is a synchronized soundtrack that is not just music-based. So it's a fair assessment, though. It's also the first black-and-white movie to win Best Picture since The Apartment. And I don't count Schindler's List because there were moments of color in Schindler's List that weren't just spot color. You know, there have always been color in movies. People think that, you know, color in movies started with Technicolor and Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz, but in fact color has been in movies since the 20s. And in fact, in Hugo you see how Georges Méliès would like hand paint individual cells. And the first movie to win the Oscar. Although this is a good bit of trivia, one of my favorite bits of trivia. What is the first film to win the Academy Award for Best Motion Picture? It is not Wings.
It's not Wings. Okay.
It is.
Isn't it like 1938, 39?
No, it is 19. It's the second year, or the third year. The first 2 years of the Oscars, they were called Best Production. And it was deemed that that might suggest to people that they should vote for it based upon its splashiness, mm-hmm. as opposed to just right. whether it was really good. And actually, in the first year of the Academy Awards, it never gets credit for it, but there was an award never given again, which was Artistic Quality of Production, which went to a movie directed by King Vidor from Texas, and they did away with it after the first year, but I think that winning the best artistic quality of a production is kind of better, you know. I'm not sure why that's not in the record books,
because mm-hmm. it could have been a really crappy plot, it could have been a really, you know, but artistic quality means it all kind of sort of came together with all his other elements
right.
to make a really great experience.
And the movie that won Best Picture, of course, famously, is a war movie, Wings. And that was, it was won for Best Production, and people were like, wow, look at all those fantastic fighting sequences, you know, dogfight sequences. So there is an element of it that becomes, you know, are you voting for the right thing?
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink. We'll have more with Arnold Wayne Jones from the Dallas Voice talking about the Academy Awards right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now's the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON, P.O. Box 710-909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON, Box 710-909, Dallas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you're supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON's pledge drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234. It's the boss of the people.
Big Bill Morganfield, the son of blues legend Muddy Waters, is coming to Dallas to help KNON celebrate the 35th anniversary of Poor David's Pub during a big KNON Blues benefit event on Saturday, March 3rd. The amazing Big Bill Morganfield celebrates and honors his father with a deep Chicago blues style, telling his own stories through original songs with a wide variety of style, fiery slide guitar, and singing. Arrive early, there's free barbecue from Red Hot and Blue while it lasts. Joining Big Bill will be Jason Elmore and Hoodoo Witch, with special guest Cheryl Arena. Opening the show will be the Chris Watson Band and Jason Elmore playing an acoustic set. Tickets are available now at KNON.org, all Red Hot and Blue locations, Bill's Records in Dallas, and Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie. Saturday, March 3rd, it's Big Bill Morganfield with Jason Elmore and Hoodoo Witch, Cheryl Arena, the Chris Watson Band, and a Jason Elmore acoustic set at Poor David's Pub. Don't forget the free barbecue from Red Hot and Blue. Poor David's Pub is located at 1313 South Lamar in Dallas. We'll see you there. Nothing but a boo.
KNON presents Trevor Fest, Saturday, March 10th at the Sons of Herman Hall in Dallas. Trevor Fest is a benefit for KNON staff member Trevor Fought, who suffered a stroke on July 29. Trevor is working hard on his rehab, but needs some help from his friends right now. Trevor Fest stars Ed Burleson, Houston Marchman, Downey Ray Ford, the KNON Blues Band featuring Greg Smith and Lady Lotion, the Cowhide Cole Review, the Acoustic Soundhounds featuring Bobby D. James, the Cutlers, C.C. Cross, Stevie D., and Church with Trevor, a special sermon with Reverend Robinson, Bishop K.D. Davis, and featuring the combined KNON Gospel Choir and Cross Timbers. Doors will open at 11 a.m. for Church with Trevor, taking place at noon. Live bands start at 2 p.m. and go and tell. Barbecue from OBQ from 5 p.m. until. Trevor Fest, an incredible day of great music in support of a great friend. Saturday, March 10th at the Sons of Herman Hall, 3414 Elm Street in Dallas. For more information, KNON.org or 214-237-3003. All proceeds go to support Trevor Fox's rehabilitation and housing efforts.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
Hi, this is Candy Markham, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Listen.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Patty Fink, and we're talking to Arnold Wayne Jones of Dallas Voice. We're talking about the Oscars. He's telling us why he was right, they were wrong.
That's exactly right.
So, we're just talking a little bit about the best picture. Tell us a little bit about some of the other pictures that that didn't win. Who else?
Well, this is
you
interesting.
You predicted the artist would win.
Yes. Yeah. And here's an interesting thing also about the way that first of the Oscars work and the danger of this more than five nominees thing. There comes a point at which, when you start talking about the Oscars, you realize that you're not talking about, like, really the best movies of the year. You're talking about the most award-worthy movies of the year. And there's always one or two that sneak in that you're like, wow, I'm impressed that the Academy... Because keep in mind, the Academy is... I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's kind of a lobbying organization for the greatness of Hollywood. And... they tend to reward their own, and so they tend to nominate movies that support that. You know, back in the day of the studio systems, I don't think there was a year where one Best Picture nominee wasn't from 20th Century Fox, because 20th Century Fox was humongous, and David Zanuck said this is the movie everybody on staff who's a member of the Academy had better vote for, and if we don't get a Best Picture nomination, I'll know why. And that was always where you could tell the difference between best director and best picture, because everyone can vote for best picture, but only directors can vote for director. So Zanuck couldn't control every director, but he could control the sound men. And so that's where you get the split between best picture and director nominations. And so you have movies like The Alamo, you know, and I think Cleopatra nominated for best picture. And that's it. You know, it's like, because the movies weren't really well regarded, but Zanuck had that kind of power. And so what you find is sometimes there's a dispute. I mean, there's always that moment where you go, oh, wow, they got it. And it used to be the surprise nomination. This year, that moment, I think, because I was actually at the Academy Awards announcement ceremony in about last month. That real moment is when Demian Bashir, the Mexican actor who appeared in the drama A Better Life, was nominated for Best Actor. And, you know, he's nominated against George Clooney and Brad Pitt. You know, and, oh, by the way, this 50-year-old Mexican guy, you know, playing a dad in the barrio. And it's this great moment where, like, hey, you got it. Well, you realize what... And he's so heartbreaking in the movie because he has just these sad eyes. I mean, he might as well be a...
So he should have won.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, this is the impossible thing about presenting awards. You know, when people say it's apples and oranges, it's apples and Hemi engines. It's completely separate things.
I mean, when Brad Pitt and George Clooney are running against each other, to me, that same thing... They play the same people in every film they're in, and people go to see them because they like them, not because, oh, it's a great movie, but because, oh, it's the new Brad Pitt movie.
Whereas, well, no, not exactly. I mean, I don't totally agree with that.
How often does Brad Pitt play Billy Bean? Come on.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
And Brad Pitt's terrific in the movie. It's a really resourceful...
Why didn't Billy Bean play Billy Bean?
I don't know. Billy Bean's available, I'm sure.
I know.
So...
And a wonderfully supportive out gay man.
Yeah.
No, you have the wrong Billy Bean.
The wrong Billy Bean?
Yes, that is not the same Billy Bean.
Oh.
Different
my
guy.
My bad.
Yeah.
My bad.
So you wouldn't have wanted to go see this movie?
Maybe not. I don't know.
No. This is a different Billy Bean. Two Billy Beans in baseball.
How many Billy Beans does baseball have?
Apparently two.
Okay, carry on, as you were.
Yeah. But I think that you sometimes get these people... I mean, like, one of the things that... I don't want to say bothers me, but Christopher Plummer won. Everyone knew Christopher Plummer was going to win. He was the one sure lock. And I'm sure there's some people, like you, David, who maybe don't follow the Oscars really closely, who say, okay, of course they give it to the 82-year-old guy who was
84.
In... 82. To 82-year-old guy who was at the Oscars at 84 years old.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Right.
The 82-year-old guy who was in The Sound of Music who's never won before. But actually, when I saw the movie last, what was it, June, I'm like, Christopher Plummer will win the Oscar for this performance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just know. I said the exact same thing.
That may be an exception, though, because very often the person who wins it like that doesn't necessarily deserve it.
Sometimes, right, but sometimes they do, and people, I think, say, oh, well, Meryl just won it because they felt that they owed it to her because she's nominated every year, and they don't want to, like, embarrass themselves.
And I'm not putting Meryl in the category of George Clooney and Brad Pitt. She's always good.
Right, but... I heard Meryl Streep on an interview recently, and she said, I'm sure people, I think it was her talking and not like the commentator, but they said people probably think, oh, she wins every year. Mm-hmm. Well, she doesn't. She hasn't won in 29 years.
She was starting to Susan Lucci there.
Yeah. I mean, she's been nominated. She received four. She received two awards out of four nominations. And she has received none out of 12 nominations. Now, 12 nominations is the same number of nominations that Katharine Hepburn received in her entire career. And she went 12 without winning. The length of time between her victories also is like the third longest between Oscar winners.
Yeah, because she hadn't got one since 82.
82, yeah. It was actually 83 that she got it, but for a 1982 movie like this is not 2010 or 11.
Which I might point out is older than Clint, who's our producer, who is younger than our cart machines.
Very sad.
And I'm only mentioning that if you didn't hear the beginning of the show. Our cart machines are going away. I'm wrecked today. I mean,
we're
interviewing Arnold, and I can't even concentrate on it. I'm so upset. Yeah.
But this is the downside of the way that the Oscars work with this 9 nominations is the, well, everyone would generally agree, the 9th nominated film. The one that got the fewest number of nominations, the one that was not spoken of at largely as being a front runner for any nominations, was Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which in general received a drubbing by the press as being a terrible movie.
So how did that get nominated?
Well, one reason is Scott Rudin, the producer, who...
He was an out gay man, and
he was an out gay man.
There's
not
another
about
Scott
that.
Rudin.
There isn't another Scott Rudin.
Yeah.
And there's an aspect of the Academy voting for Scott Rudin. At the Academy Awards last year, Aaron Sorkin, in accepting his screenplay award, described Scott Rudin as the greatest film producer alive today. I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way about that. I have a really cool story from my experience in California during the Oscar season that I'll tell you about. I have a friend who is works in movie production. He does a lot of work on Avatar. He worked on Avatar in asset management, and he did the same basic job for Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And he attended what's called the cook-off. The cook-off is the thing where when a movie is nominated for best, or when a movie is eligible for best of visual effects, they actually submit excerpts of their movie saying this is why we deserve a nomination for visual effects. And a committee narrows that number down to 10. And they go to this thing called a cook-off, and they show them that to all the eligible members of their division. And then they explain to the eligible members why they think that it was really good. So they'll say, hey, this is Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Every time you see an ape, we'd had no actual apes in the movie of any kind. They're all digital. This was a motion capture and everything. And they go, wow, that's great. And they literally leave that ceremony where they see these 10 nominated, and they go into a room and they vote moments later. So my friend who attended the cook-off was like, and you knew exactly just from the audience reaction, just from the presentation, what was going to get nominated. And he read off his list of what he knew was going to get nominated. And the nominees to him clearly were going to be, obviously, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, he had a kind of a dog in that fight. But also... Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which he was absolutely gobsmacked by, and the technology for Captain America, obviously going to get nominated. People probably less enthusiastic, he figured, about Hugo and Transformers, really, which seemed just kind of... Hugo ends up winning Ghost Protocol and Captain America not even nominated. So here these guys watch, and you can sense in the audience this, wow, they're great. But we're going to go back and vote for our friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, wow. You have to assume that there's something involved in that.
Right.
You know, or, oh, wow, that was good special effects, but it wasn't what I like to do. I like the digital robots. I mean, there were two visual effects nominees this year that had robots in them.
I couldn't believe we were seeing anything from Transformers on the screen in terms of nominees.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. It's an incredible... I mean, the nominations for it were sound mixing, sound editing, and visual effects. I mean, that's
really
all
the
movie
the
has
movie.
Going for it. You know. Stephen Colbert the other day said, you know, you're prejudiced against movies like this because they aren't, you know, don't have big-name stars or a plot.
Or a plot.
And that's basically what it comes down to. I mean, there's an element of it where it's just, you know... This is the thing. As movies are becoming more international, dialogue is a liability. Mm-hmm. Complex plotting is not useful. I think
the dumbing down of the American motion picture.
Not the American motion picture, the international motion picture, because that's true of a lot of movies. I mean, think of the movies from when people say to you, oh, I really like Hong Kong movies. What's a Hong Kong movie?
Beats Me.
Oh, it's kickboxing,
yeah,
and
it's action.
Action and
martial Hong Kong arts, action, yeah, martial, yeah, arts film. Yeah. They don't mean, oh, I really like that drama of the two gay men working in a fish market. Mm-hmm. They mean one with directed by John Woo and with Cho Yun-fat shooting up a fish market filled, mm-hmm, with gay men. Right. You know, that's what they mean when they say a Hong Kong action movie. Mm-hmm. What's a Bollywood movie?
An Indian.
But what is it? It's dancing.
Music.
Music. Flashy costumes. Simple romantic plot.
Well, it kind of reminds me, I don't know if we had a friend who worked with the show many years ago, Mike Hathaway, and some time ago he was watching the film Salt, and he posted on Facebook that he goes, I'm halfway through this movie, I don't understand the plot, is she not, you know, what's going on here, I just don't get this plot. And so I said, Mike, you just don't understand what's going on here. The plot of Salt is Angelina Jolie is hot.
That's exactly right.
It's like, oh
now I get it.
And now, you know, that is exactly what the plot is. You don't have to follow all the twists and turns.
So Angelina Jolie won Best Actress, right?
Well, she won Best Meme.
Oh.
Best post-Oscar meme.
Yeah, she won for Best Meme.
Okay, Christopher.
And it's all about meme with her.
Christopher Plummer won Best Actor. You thought he actually deserved that.
Absolutely deserved to win it.
Who else was nominated that you thought was good? Because Best Actor doesn't mean that one was good, the others were bad. Who deserved to? Who was kind of, well, we had to have five nominees.
Right, well, the supporting actor nominees were all pretty good, actually. Even Jonah Hill in Moneyball. But they were also Kenneth Branagh in My Week with Marilyn, Nick Nolte in Warrior, and Max von Sydow, who I didn't actually see in because he was in Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, but Max von Sydow is one of my favorite actors, and if either he or Christopher Plummer won, they were going to be the oldest actor ever to win an acting Oscar, so because they're both 82. But they were good. The other thing, too, I went to the screening last August of The Help, and my friend Del Shores has directed a movie called Trials and Tribulations of a Trailer Trash Housewife, which comes out later this year. And he and I were talking about that movie, and he was telling me about how this woman, Octavia Spencer, was in the stage production of it, and she's starring in the movie, and how the movie that she was starring in before that was this movie, The Help, directed by his friend Tate Taylor, who, interesting enough, played the character, the young gay actor, soap actor, in Sordid Lives in the original stage production of that 20 years ago, or whatever it is.
And Del has been a guest on this show.
Has he? Yeah.
Before. Went to Baylor with him.
So I came out of The Help, and I texted Del, and I said, Del, I just came out of a screening. Have you seen The Help yet? And he said, no. How's Octavia? And I texted him back, and I said, Oscar. That was at a screening before anyone had any buzz about her. It was obvious from the moment she's on screen that was a chewy performance, just begging for someone to say she is great. Jessica Chastain, nominated from that movie. Jessica Chastain had five movies out in 2011, her first year in movies.
Wow.
And the other ones were like, one of them was The Tree of Life, which was also nominated for Best Picture, you know. So her nomination, and she was wonderful in that movie. She really deserved to be nominated also. Janet McTeer was nominated, playing a trans character in Albert Nobbs. Melissa McCarthy was nominated for Bridesmaids, which was a very popular choice also.
That was very
also
funny on stage when they did the Scorsese drinking game.
Yeah, that was funny. And then Bernice Bejeau, the wife of Michel Hazavinicius, the director of The Artist.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. We'll be back with more right after this.
If you don't want your old SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
The Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge Celebration begins Friday, March 2nd with a ticketed fundraiser starring Lyle Lovett. Lyle Lovett will be performing new material from his latest CD, Release Me. Lyle Lovett and his large band performing live on the Calatrava Design Bridge. There will also be Calatrava-inspired costume performers, local food tastings from Trinity Grove Celebrity Chefs, drinks, DJ Lucy Rubel spinning bridge tunes, the a cappella Street Corner Symphony, fireworks, and the lighting of the bridge. Valet parking provided with tickets. For Friday night tickets or more information on the Saturday and Sunday events on the bridge, MHHBridgeCelebration.com. That's MHHBridgeCelebration.com.
The Creel Law Firm handles all types of legal cases: personal injury, criminal defense, business corporate concerns, family violence, sexual abuse, wrongful death, automobile, trucking, big rig, and 18-wheeler accidents, permanent injury, and more. Legal services available throughout the Dallas and Fort Worth Metroplex. Attorney Robert Krill can be reached at 214-432-4402, 817-500-0204, or toll-free at 800-775-6532, or CRILLlaw.com. CRILLlaw.com for the Krill Law Firm. Se habla español.
Hello, I'm Christina from the interwebs, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here with Patty Fink, and we're talking to Arnold Wayne Jones of the Dallas Voice, and we're very sad that was the last time we'll ever use our cart machine.
Ode to the two-track. I'm going to write one.
I think you should.
Ode to the two-track.
Maybe it should just be a haiku.
I was going to say, I don't know if an ode is really required here. A sonnet's probably pushing it. A haiku would be really good.
Haiku's probably very fitting.
For anybody who just tuned in, this is the last day that we're using our 8-track players to play our 2-track public service announcements. And tomorrow we're getting this thing in the studio called a computer. And everybody who works here and has been at KNON for any length of time is just wrecked about this, because it's like, computer! Now, most of us use them. And the new system will take the PSA and with our mouse move it into the play thing, and you click play, and that's it. It's really not all that difficult. But everybody's real upset about it, because we love our 8-track player using 1960s technology.
It's state-of-the-art 2-track. Yeah.
It is. It's
total state-of-the-art.
It is. It's one of the few things we have in the studio that we can say, for 8-track technology, that's it.
Well, I'll use a haiku to say bye to.
Well, please compose that before the end of the show. Remember, 575.
We're talking about the Oscars and some of the winners.
I'll tell you something. I want to mention something else. You know, everyone's talking about Meryl Streep and her breaking her streak, her Meryl streak. There's someone else who broke a streak of repeated Oscar losing. The most nominated living person in Oscar history right now won on...
Oh, I thought Meryl Streep had broken that with 17 nominations.
I said, that's acting?
That's acting.
Okay.
I said the most nominated a living person
is
Woody Allen. Mm. He has not won since his screenplay to Hannah and Her Sisters. He won for his screenplay to Midnight in Paris.
And he gave the best speech, I thought.
I thought it was funny that they announced. They said, and the winner is Woody Allen. Woody Allen is not here to accept his award because, of course, you don't even have to look to see if he's there. He's just not going to be there. He's only attended one Academy Awards. Do you know when he attended it?
After 2001.
He attended the 2002 the Academy Awards in 2002, right after 9/11.
And he did it specifically to invite filmmakers to come to New York.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's the only Academy Awards he's ever attended. But he also became only the first person ever to win 3 Best Original Screenplay Oscars. So for Annie Hall, Hen and Her Sisters, and this. But if you add up his directing and acting nominations, he's got like 24 nominations.
Wow.
And so, well more than Meryl Streep. And he hasn't won since 1986. So congratulations to him.
Well, I was really pulling, really, and I think many people were, pulling for Viola Davis for best actress in a lead role.
They were pulling it for Viola Davis? Is that what you said?
No, we were pulling for Viola Davis. And I thought, well, in the last moments before the award was up, I said, oh, my gosh, because I'm such a Meryl Streep fan. I told Aaron, I said, you know, what if it doesn't go to either one of those? What if it goes to somebody else?
Rooney Mara!
It's got to go. If it's not going to be Viola, I hope it goes to Meryl, you know, for obvious reasons. I'm a big fan. What do you think happened there? Do you think it was just a gimme for Meryl Streep?
I loved Viola Davis. And as a matter of fact, when I was handicapping the awards, because I handicapped them even in the nomination process in the same way that they do with the Oscars, which is I say, okay, which one is the surefire? The one that I know is, and I don't do as my favorite, I do the one I think is going to get nominated because, you know, I got money on the line for this thing. And so you put down Meryl Streep because obviously she's got a lot of things going for her. And then you say, okay, who's another, like, certain nominee? And Rooney Mara is low on the list because you're not sure. And Tilda Swinton is maybe like, maybe it's going to be Tilda, maybe it's going to be Rooney, maybe it's going to be Viola, maybe it's going to be Charlize. You're not sure who the last two nominations are going to be. So I think, I don't remember my exact list, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was Meryl Streep, Glenn Close, Michelle Williams, then Viola Davis. And because I didn't know if everybody thought, is that a good enough performance? So they did that stand out? She was overshadowed by Octavia Spencer and Jessica Chastain. Is it considered a leading role or more of a supporting role because it's really an ensemble show? Was it released too long ago? And then wins the SAG Award, and you're like, okay, people did see this, and they really did like it. But for me, and I loved Viola, and I've met her in person. She's a lovely lady. She's tiny. She's so tiny. She's, like, shorter than me. That's small. And
I've been a fan of hers for the first time I saw her on TV.
Yeah, she's terrific. And but then you see... but Meryl's performance, actually David Edelstein, who I don't always agree with, the film critic for the New York Magazine, he had an interesting piece that was about, it was basically reviewing Meryl Streep's performance in The Iron Lady, and he did it as an internal dialogue, where he says, oh great, here I am going to see Meryl Streep do another impersonation, and the technique is going to be obvious, and oh, well, that's an interesting choice, and oh, damn it, she's incredible! Because the one thing I walked out of the movie thinking was, oh, I just saw a movie with Meryl Streep in it, as opposed to the actual watching the life of Margaret Thatcher. I mean, her performance, you don't see the technique. It is a flawless, it is one of the great acting performances of all time. It really is. I mean, I had the same reaction for Sophie's Choice the last time she won.
That's a movie I only watched once and will never watch again.
Yeah.
I just couldn't.
But she was a Polish Holocaust survivor.
Oh, completely. That's one of the reasons it's one of those films that will stay with me forever.
Right.
You know.
And I mean, she speaks flawless Polish. I say flawless because I, you know, speak Polish so fluently myself. But I mean, it's so convincing. And it was the details as a younger woman and as an older woman, as a senile woman, as Margaret Thatcher. I mean, I don't see how anyone who says, oh, I wanted Viola to win, I totally get that. Anyone who says that Meryl Streep didn't deserve it, you haven't seen the movie. It's as simple as that.
Well, I've heard an interview with her on several occasions, as you mentioned before, she's made the rounds, where she talked about if she can't convince her fellow actors in the movie on the set that she's Margaret Thatcher, she can't possibly convince the audience.
I liked a comment where someone talked about her accent. I think this is Terry Gross, and they were asking her about her, you know, doing the accent and how she approaches it. And her comment, and she talked about it a little bit politely.
I heard that interview, yeah.
But then she said, but it's all the same thing. I mean, the accent is in the walk and the teeth and the hair and the looks and the, it's all part of the same process. You can't separate it.
And I loved how she talked about it, and the makeup artist, in fact, did win.
Yes.
For The Iron Lady, but she had done this process of doing a mask that she could actually be expressive in, to where her facial muscles would go with the mask, and they did it for the whole aging process of
I didn't know that, but
Margaret Thatcher. And so that was one of the great things too, is that she was able to be facially expressive in all of this makeup, and that was the plan from the get-go. So apparently he had this technique to do that, which was really great.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very interesting, though, because in this particular film, as opposed to many others that she's done, she had a lot of footage that she could work from to really get to know Margaret Thatcher, her cadence and her
mannerisms. Of course, the downside of that is that this footage that she has access to, the rest of the world has access to as well. And so
it's a risk.
If you're creating Sophie... Nobody knows Sophie.
Right.
You can play her with a Brooklyn accent. Says, "Yeah, I've been in Brooklyn for a couple of years, and I already lost my Polish accent." You know, and everyone go, "Okay, well, I guess Sophie might have lost her Polish accent by now." But you're playing somebody who everybody knows. You better damn look like her and sound like her. Yeah. I mean, or you get credit for the interesting choices you make that are different than that, like casting 5'7" River Phoenix as 6'3" Johnny Cash, you know, and he looks basically nothing like Johnny Cash, but it's the swagger and the cadence of the voice, and you just kind of say, yeah, he's Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm. Best director, we didn't mention that one. We only have a couple of minutes left.
Of course, again, Michelle Hazvanicius, who was nominated, who directed The Artist, also edited The Artist and wrote The Artist. And The Artist is a great movie. I mean, you could see it's a little twee, a little precious, a little self-indulgent, but I didn't see it that way at all. I went in, I've talked to several people who are like, oh, well, I guess I have to see it now, but I'm really not looking forward to it. And I say to them, go see it. Because I kind of said, I knew it was almost 2 hours long, like an hour and 50 minutes long. I'm like, I watch silent films on TCM on Sunday nights. They do them late on Sunday nights every so often. And classics, you know, that won Oscars and so on and so forth. And I will say, and I get kind of bored with them after a while. I mean, the Charlie Chaplin movies that are silent, like Modern Times and Gold Rush, I can still watch over and over again. They fascinate. And that's what this movie does. It really is like three little mini movies that each tell a different aspect of a story. I mean, it's like three acts, kind of. But it's really well done. It's a comedy, which is nice for the Oscars to reward a comedy. Jean Dujardin's performance is so breathtakingly beautiful. One of the things that the Oscar season has ruined for you is the first moment when Georges Valentin talks in the movie at the very end. He speaks and he has a French accent. And even though you know it's a French movie, even though you know he's a French actor, when you see this guy that you've been watching silent for the last 2 hours speak in French, like, oh yeah, that's why he didn't want to be in sound movies, because he has this really heavy French accent. Now that you've seen him accept an award at every ceremony, you know that. But when he's nobody, you know, it would almost be like if it was Brad Pitt the entire time he comes and says, "Thank you very much for hiring me for this movie." Mm-hmm. You know, and you were like, "Oh yeah, it never occurred to me that Brad Pitt would sound like Arnold Stang." Mm-hmm. You know, and so, but he was great. Also, we want to mention The Separation.
Right.
I know Patty says she has a lot of Persian friends. I have a Persian friend who is absolutely ecstatic about the win for Separation.
I mean, politically, yeah. It was interesting because Iran approved the movie.
Yes,
the government. What is the movie about, first of all?
The movie is, it's really hard to say the thing, single thing it's about, but it's called A Separation because it's about this woman and man in Tehran who are trying to divorce, and the husband doesn't want a divorce, and at the very beginning of the movie, you're kind of against him, because, like, she obviously wants a divorce so that she can emigrate to the United States with her daughter and have a better life, and that's one of the reasons why it's surprising that Iran approve the movie, because it's implicitly saying Iran is corrupt and Iran is not a place for women to grow up. And
people need to get out.
Well, and you can have a better life in the United States.
Right. But eventually you realize that he's really a selfless, great guy who's being railroaded when he's forced to basically take care of his father and his daughter with his wife not around to help him out. And he's accused of something which you know he's not guilty of. The problem I have with the movie is that the essential conceit of the movie is whether or not he knew this woman was pregnant when he pushed her. And in the context of the movie, that's incredibly important. To me, it's even as if I were his lawyer, you know, because I practice law, used to practice law, I would concede that one way or the other and still go on and say it doesn't make any difference because it was not foreseeable and it was justifiable. I mean, I would change the narrative, and the movie doesn't. And maybe that's because that's the way it is in Iran, and it makes a big difference. And I don't understand the Iranian legal system. I had a couple of problems with that. The movie I wanted to win was called In Darkness, which I'm always a critic of the fact that the Oscars love to give. The Academy loves to give Oscars to movies about the Holocaust, but this is a really good one, and directed by Agnieszka Holland, a wonderful, also Academy Award winning, filmmaker who did Maya Tania and
what Iran loved about
Europa
winning also was that they won, Israel didn't.
They did.
Oh,
they
that did. Was all over the news there, and Israel was kind of pissed also at that. the other foreign films, any of them that you thought really should have won?
I only know one other of the films that was nominated. One, Monsieur Lazare from Canada is kind of a comedy. I don't know the Iranian film, footnote, it screens soon. It opens mm-hmm. next month. And Bullhead, which is this Belgian film about like drugs and this guy who takes hormones and becomes pretty incredibly massive. I was a little. I liked Rango. I saw Rango and I did like it. But I also saw Chico and Rita, which won Rango won the animated short film, or animated feature film. But Chico and Rita is a lovely film about the jazz and the relationship between two people from living in Havana into the United States, and it's really well done and incredibly charming. Excuse me. So I recommend those as well.
I'm glad that they continue to give pay homage to those films, and I'm always afraid that they're gonna start eliminating.
They talked about it a number of years ago. Yeah,
you know,
they mentioned it a couple of years ago. I always think the funny thing about short films and such is that if I say to you Academy Award nominee Jeff Goldblum is appearing like that, he's like, well, what was he nominated for, Jurassic Park or The Fly? It's like, no, for a live action short film he directed 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Or if I said Academy Award winner Christine Lottie, you'd say, I thought she lost for Swing Shift. It's like, she did, but she won for a short film she directed. Mm-hmm. And now, believe it or not, Gore Verbinski gets to be Academy Award winner Gore Verbinski.
And I think that's great. I think it's cool to keep all of those films in.
Yeah.
And it's state of the art.
We need to wrap it up. Thank you, Arnold, for being with us.
Thank you.
And next award show, come join us again.
We'll do that.